Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello, folks, and welcome to the Game Day Premier League preview podcast from TalkSport with me, Sam Matterface, Darren Lewis from The Mirror, and TalkSport transfer guru Alex Crook. Play on! Premier League keeps ball rolling despite a late shout at the Cottage. Manchester United's late goal in midweek means they are in a title race now, win their game in hand, and City back in training after scare. The game with Chelsea is set to go ahead, but questions remain over the league's handling of the affair. Liverpool go to Saints after drawing with the Sinners in midweek. Leicester visit Bruce's boys next. And Tottenham welcome Leeds to North London. Jose versus Bielsa. Lick your lips. It's all on the podcast that is prepared to roll up its sleeves and say, jab me here.
Sam, you're so tempting.
It's the Game Day Premier League preview podcast from TalkSport.
This is Game Day.
Well, hello to assistant editor of the Daily Mirror, Darren Lewis. Hello.
Hello. Happy Christmas, or shall I say Happy New Year now?
It's Happy New Year now. I think Christmas is well gone, Darren. Come on. I know you're grabbing hold of those quality streets like there's no tomorrow, just to make sure.
You can tell, can you?
And Alex Crook, the TalkSport transfer guru and football reporter, is here as well. Hello.
Hello, good morning. Nice to see you both.
So Manchester United are 3 points off the top with a game in hand. Who wants to go first with a grovelling apology to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
Listen, you can't argue with the current run of form. You can't argue with the turnaround since that debacle at home to Tottenham. And having watched Liverpool toil against Newcastle last night, if there's ever a time to win the Premier League title, then maybe it is now. And if he does that, then I will, of course, be issuing a grovelling apology. For the moment, I'm just enjoying the thrill ride.
I thought they were really dogged in the game against Wolverhampton Wanderers. I thought they just kept going and going and going and going, and there was only one team that were going to win the match in the end. I don't think Wolves created too much in that second half, really. And when Rashford scored, if there had been a crowd there, the roof would have came off the place. Go on, Darren, what did you want to say? You wanted to have a go at them, didn't you?
Well, no, not so much a go at them, but I think you can only really ask for an apology if they win the league, because that's the barometer by which Man United are judged.
They haven't won the league since 2013.
Absolutely, and that's why managers at the club, even if they win silverware like Jose Mourinho did, they're not necessarily deemed as a success, because Man United, their barometer is winning titles and Champions Leagues, and that's the harsh reality around one of the biggest clubs in the world. So does Ollie deserve an apology for getting within 3 points off top spot? Not really. If you look at the form at Old Trafford, it's not been great. If you look at the team, they've been hugely reliant on Bruno Fernandes. If you look at the Wolves game, Wolves had more shots on target than Man United. So I don't really buy into your idea that, they had 5 to Man United's 3. So you can pull that face. But I think as far as Wolves are concerned...
The quality of those shots were nowhere near. I mean, if you look... I mean, I'm going to do it now so that we've got the real statistics. But if you look at the XG
Man United
from that
had 11
game,
attempts on goal. I will say, the Wolves had 9.
But I haven't looked at this. I'm telling you, if I look at the XG for that game, Manchester United will be significantly higher than Wolverhampton Wanderers, right? The XG, 1.48 Manchester United, Wolverhampton Wanderers, 0.41. The quality of the chances that they had was a lot higher than Wolves.
So hang on a minute. You're gonna throw at me the theory instead of the evidence of our own eyes on the day.
No, I was there. I'm using the evidence of my eyes.
That's why I say our rather than mine.
And then I backed it up with the statistics.
Yeah, but the statistics are that on the grass, Wolves had 5 shots on target and United had 3.
But the quality of those shots on target were better for Manchester United. They looked like they were likely to score more goals than Wolverhampton Wanderers, whose shots on target, one of which was from the edge of the penalty area, it was like rolling a P-roller back to the goalkeeper. That's not that. That's, it might be a shot on target, but it's not a chance to score a goal.
I have 2 points. One is that what we've seen from this festive period, which has felt more congested than ever because of the belated start of the season, the ability to grind out results has been key. Manchester United showed that ability against Wolverhampton Wanderers. Liverpool, in their 2 games against West Bromwich Albion and last night against Newcastle, didn't show that ability. But the main reason that United won the game, the only reason that we're even talking about them as potential title contenders, is because of Bruno Fernandes, because the desire that he showed deep in stoppage time to keep attacking, keep driving that team forward. The pass to Rashford was out of this world. If he stays fit, they've got a chance. If he gets injured, they've got no chance.
Actually, the main reason we're talking about them is because I'm desperate for you two to backtrack. But anyway, we'll move on. Right, let's get to the previews. First of all, the biggest game of the weekend. Well, we think.
Werner has got clear and he's on the edge of the penalty area. It's Timo Werner. He's stabbed in and Chelsea have won the game. Pulisic has got their 3rd goal. 3-1 they lead.
We know our standards. We play real well in the past. We cannot win games without the way we played. So, and from here we'll win games. More games in the future.
Newcastle have given it away. Cancelo in the 18-yard box steers it across and Ferran Torres will tap it in from 8 yards out after Federico Fernandez's clearance fell straight to him, and it's more away day blues at the Etihad for Newcastle United.
At least it looks like we've got a game for now. Chelsea against Manchester City, although Spurs only found out 3 hours before kickoff that their game with Fulham in the week wasn't going ahead. City are back in training, Darren, and there were no extra positives from the latest round of testing. So the game with Chelsea looks like it is going to take place. Everton still haven't got an explanation, by the way, as far as we know, as to why their game was called off on Monday so late. But any calls for pause have been shut down. And it's hard to argue with that, actually, isn't it? Because so far, just 3 games have been postponed out of hundreds that have gone ahead.
I thought you were going to go to Crook first, because I don't want to be a party pooper, but you say just 3 games have been postponed, but we've got cases everywhere. We've got Premier League managers like Sam Allardyce saying, I'm 66 years of age and I don't want to catch the coronavirus. We've had David Moyes get it. We've had Mikel Arteta get it. We've had players up and down the country. So I can't say that I'm jumping for joy or that it's necessarily a victory for common sense that everything is going ahead. I don't want to go too far the other way and say shut everything down, because obviously if you can put games on in a safe environment, then fair enough. But something just sits uneasily with me when you've got a situation where games, and we've seen 2 of them this week, are postponed within a few hours of the kickoff. Mm. You've got managers like Jose Mourinho coming out and saying, we're sitting around, what's going on? You've got players preparing. You've got all sorts going on. This is the kind of thing the government do when they announce, you know, lockdowns in parts of the country where people have arranged their New Year's
Eve. Yeah, it was leaked through The Athletic the day before, and then eventually we find out the real announcement just before we're all going to serious restrictions. Yeah, I get what you mean. It needs to be handled slightly differently, doesn't it, Alex?
Yeah, I think it needs more clarity and more leadership from the Premier League. It's a ridiculous situation that they waited so late to call off that game between Fulham and Spurs. But I know it sits uneasy with a few Premier League managers, not least David Moyes. He was very vocal when I spoke to him in midweek. The fact that they are going against their own protocol. They were told at the start of the season, clubs, maybe it wasn't formal, wasn't in writing, but certainly there was a gentleman's agreement that games would only be postponed if teams had fewer than 14 players available. I'm not convinced Manchester City did have fewer than 14 players available. I'm not convinced that Fulham did either. I know there's the health and safety issue and the risk possibly of passing it on to the opposition team. But I think we need to get this into some kind of perspective. 18 tests is a record high since they began testing in May, but 18 from more than 1,000 isn't a big number. I think training grounds are a very safe and sanitised environment. So too are Premier League grounds. We've all been there and we can't fail to be impressed by how the clubs have managed that side of things. So I think it is safe to carry on the season. And I think it's also important for the mental well-being of the nation when more of the country than ever before now are in Tier 4 restrictions. Football has been a light release.
Oh, come on. Listen, we can't stick that on football. There are lots of issues and areas around which the mental health of the nation is important. And football might play a small part, but I don't think you can stick it all on football, that it's football's job to address the health of the nation. And I keep hearing that parroted around. And
well, the government have said it on more than one occasion.
Listen, the government use all sorts of things as a fig leaf to cover their in. I mean, listen, we're a football show. We're not a political show, so I won't go too far down that road. But I just feel that, yeah, listen, you make a lot of good points, and I don't really want to get hung up on, you know.
Okay, so in which case, let me ask you this question. Do you think we'll complete the season?
Yeah, I do. I do. Yeah. I think the will is there.
In the Premier League, I'm not convinced about the EFL.
Yeah, I'm not convinced about the EFL either. I'm not convinced about the FA Cup upcoming in the next couple of weeks. I think some serious questions need to be asked before that is guaranteed. Crook?
Do you think on that, and I mentioned it on Sports Breakfast this morning, will there be some Premier League teams who possibly don't want to play their FA Cup third round tie against an EFL opponent who haven't carried out tests on their players?
I think that the FA were talking about everybody who plays in the third round has to be tested. The quality of those tests and the duration between the two sets of testing, or whether there'd be two or one set of testing, I think will be in question. But if I was a Premier League club and I was playing a team that weren't a Premier League opposition and hadn't been in a biosecure bubble, I'd be saying, it's not for me, I'm afraid. It's not for me.
Can I just say, I mean, I spoke to the Premier League earlier this week and they were saying that they had increased their testing to once every 72 hours for clubs in Tier 4, and they were hoping to extend that to
pretty much everyone, isn't it now?
Yeah, so I mean, the Premier League, this is why I say I don't want to be too negative, because the Premier League are doing what they can.
And they've done a very good job up until now, it must be said, by the way, in getting all the games on and making sure that the environment feels secure.
But Sam, the problem is this. The Premier League players, when they get into the biosecure bubble, they're all protected, the training grounds are safe, and the stadia are safe, but they go out and they do all the same things as the rest of us. They fill their cars, they go into petrol stations, they go into supermarkets, they do all of the things that the rest of us do.
Exactly, but that's the risk for everybody who goes to work, though, isn't it? You know, at the end of the day, you go to work, I go to work, we all fill up our cars, we all go all over the country covering
football. Tell that to Lascelles and St. Maximin, who are still struggling
I'm still struggling with the effects of coronavirus. I've had it back in March. So, you know, I know that it is a serious issue and it is a problem. But at the same time, what are the solutions? The solutions are that we shut down the entire industry. I'm not sure that's going to happen. So if that isn't going to happen, we've got to find the best way forward. And at the moment, it doesn't seem to be the justification for a circuit breaker. I mean, Sam Allardyce's idea of a circuit breaker, I mean, I don't get it really. What's going to happen? 2 weeks? The players have to train every day.
I don't really understand why he's leading that particular charge, because
he wants
had
to get
choice
on the training ground and shape his players for the run-in, surely.
But he had a choice whether or not to put himself at risk by taking this management job. He decided to take that choice. So for him to come out 2 weeks later and say that he's worried about his health and football shouldn't be played, I find that a bit unpalatable, to be honest.
Okay, should we look at the game itself? Chelsea event against Manchester City very quickly, because of course the reason that we're talking about this is because Manchester City and Chelsea probably will play now at 4:30 on Sunday. Chelsea have scored just once in four league games against the Big Six this season. Are they going to struggle again, Darren?
Yes, they are, because Man City are defensively strong, Chelsea have gone completely off the rails for me. One win in their last four in the league and one win in their last five in all competitions, and something's gone horribly wrong. A defence that looked so strong, Mendy in goal, Silva leading the back four in front of him, and Kante in his rightful position. They've lost their way, they've lost their confidence, they've lost their spark. And I've seen City play over the last few games. They were really impressive, obviously, in the Carabao Cup. But in the league, they've got their mojo back. I think Chelsea are at the very least going to be fortunate to take a point.
They are still looking for their first win over a top side this season. Chelsea and Manchester City have got the best defence in Europe's top five leagues. Alex, how do you see this one going?
Yeah, I think I'm tended to agree with Darren, to be honest, especially given that Manchester City have had that bit of extra rest courtesy of their game being called off. I think there's a lot of questions for Frank Lampard to answer heading into the new year. You mentioned there they haven't beaten a team in the top six this season. His record actually on that front since he took the job is pretty lamentable, including, of course, the FA Cup final against Arsenal. Not that we're calling them a top six team anymore, but they are historically one of the big six. So I think Chelsea need a performance. And with Manchester City so stubborn defensively and still creating chances, but not necessarily scoring them with the regularity they have in the past, I think this could be another difficult afternoon for Frank Lampard. And it'll be interesting to see what happens in January. Does he go out and spend another 150 million?
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Soko picking up possession, he's through for Harry Kane, Kane from a tight angle, majestically finished, number 16 of the season for him, the 204th goal of his Tottenham career.
They tried to close out a game for 89 minutes and they failed. Wolves have got the deserved equaliser. It's finished here, Wolves 1, Spurs 1.
Maybe I can tell the players at half-time, defend, 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 and they attack.
Harrison looks to play a 1-2 with Bamford. Harrison in the area, makes it 3! That's glorious! Absolutely glorious from Leeds United.
Really excited to go down there and, you know, play against, again, one of the top teams in the world. We're going to, you know, continue to play our style of football. We have lots of faith in Marcelo.
Let's move on to Spurs against Leeds. It's live on TalkSport at 12:30 and part of our game day Saturday. We've got three games live from the Premier League. Tottenham's form has just come off the bridle a little bit in recent weeks. They are actually below Chelsea in the table, 26 points from 15 games. They do have a game in hand over their London rivals. But Leeds United come to town on Saturday with some good results in their back pocket. Should be an entertaining game, a clash of styles, Jose and his pragmatism against Bielsa and his murder ball, Alex Crook.
I half fancy Leeds for this game, I have to be honest. I think looking at how cautious and how defence-minded Tottenham have been in recent weeks, we know what we're going to get from Leeds. They're going to take the game to the opposition. They scored some sensational goals again against West Bromwich Albion.
Yeah, that first one was cracker, wasn't it?
It was just a shame their Twitter account decided to ruin it for everybody, but we won't delve too deeply into that. But I think, I think Tottenham, if they play as they have done, if they play as they did against Wolves, are content to let the opposition have the ball, then I think Leeds have got genuine weapons that can hurt them.
I think the other way, actually. I think because Bielsa's team come onto you so much and take the game to you, that Spurs, with their counter-attacking abilities, this plays into Jose Mourinho's hands, Darren.
I agree with you. I think that if Leeds play as open at Spurs as they did against Man United, they'll lose, and they'll lose big because Spurs have got too many quick, decisive players in that forward line. Kane will drop deep. He'll release Son. He'll release Moura. He'll release Bergwijn. And they will just demolish Leeds if they play that open. at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. The interesting thing about Leeds as well is that they've conceded three or more goals on six occasions this season. So it's all or nothing, really. They have that got that good recent run. Three wins in the last four. They've scored 13 goals if you concede the two they scored at Man United in that defeat. So it's either a feast or famine in many respects. And I think if they go and they play the same way, and they do, don't they? They won't compromise. They won't listen to anybody else. They will play the same way wherever they go. And that's
their beauty, isn't it? I mean, the fact is, you know what you're going to get when you go and watch Leeds. I mean, if you're going to purchase a ticket to watch anybody, I mean, you're guaranteed a certain type of performance if you purchase a Leeds United ticket.
Fair enough. You know, that's what you pay your money for. That's what you recruit Bielsa for. I'm just saying Spurs need to win this. The wheels have come off. They've won, I think, one in their last six after winning six in their previous nine. So Mourinho's got to win this. So if Leeds open up and roll the red carpet out for him to get space in behind, he will demolish them.
They've only kept one clean sheet in five matches, Leeds United. So to expect Tottenham to test that. Later on in the day, it's West Bromwich Albion against Arsenal. That's an 8 o'clock kickoff live on Talk Sport. Trevor Sinclair and Nigel Adderley bringing you live commentary of that game. And Mikel Arteta, well, you know, 2 weeks ago, he was getting ready for the chop and he was going to be on the dole queue in January. Now, all of a sudden, he is the hero again. Arsenal in 13th, taking on West Bromwich Albion in 19th. And Big Sam has got a bit of a history, hasn't he, with Arsenal? I wonder whether or not he will be relishing the opportunity of making Arteta's halo slip.
It doesn't sound like it, does it? He wants the season to be put on hold. I actually think we know more about the task that's facing Sam Allardyce now after that hammering they took at home to Leeds than we did after their smash and grab raid at Liverpool. And in some ways, I think a lot of people would have taken a bit of satisfaction in that because Sam Allardyce was hailed as a master tactician after that Liverpool game. But if you watch the game, you look at the possession, you look at the chances, on another day, Liverpool would have won 6 or 7 nil with no questions asked. So they were lucky, West Brom. Okay, they stayed in the game, they worked hard, but it wasn't a masterstroke from Sam Allardyce. It was the fact that Liverpool weren't quite firing and didn't take their chances. I think we saw more of the problems that Sam Allardyce is going to face by the way the players almost just seem to down tools against Leeds. And Adrian Durham actually made a really good point on Drive in the week. He said the West Bromwich Albion players looked a bit baffled and bewildered as to why they were trying to play so defensive against a team effectively that were promoted along with them last season. And if this is the way that Sam Allardyce is going to approach every game, they aren't going to take enough points to stay up.
And one of the other points that's made quite a lot this week is if you are a manager like Sam Allardyce, like Tony Pulis, and you're turning around to professional footballers and saying to them, basically, our philosophy is you ain't good enough to play football, so you need to do it in this way. Immediately, you sort of lose some of the bigger personalities in the group, Darren. Is that fair?
Yes and no, because I think you're absolutely right. You do lose some of the personalities. The problem is those personalities don't have that much self-awareness because they're second bottom of the league because they can't defend. And so if you go to a club and a group of players that can't defend...
Darren Allardyce here, hello.
Absolutely. Well, listen, that's why they look as though they're going to go down because they can't defend. So really what you've got to do as a starting point is say, look, let's forget about everything else and go right back to basics. George Graham used to do it when he go to a new club. His first couple of results were variably goalless draws because he stripped it right down and went back to basics. And then you can start to add the frills and the cherries on the top. So look, I think Allardyce will go into the transfer window and he'll do some business just like he did at Sunderland, just like he did at West Ham, Everton, because he needs to. He needs to improve that squad. That's what they should have done in the first place before to give Bilic a chance. Second bottom now, they're not that far from safety. If they go and do some business with the window reopening, they've got a chance. If they don't, they've got no chance.
They're not that far from safety, but 8 points from 16 games is not a sort of indicator that you're going to stay in the Premier League, I'm afraid. I mean, if you look at all the statistics over the years, very few teams have stayed up at this stage of the season with that few points, if any. Okay, let's leave this one to Alex Crook, because at 5:30 on Saturday night, he is commentating on Brighton versus Wolves on Talk Sport. Alex, what are you going to give us?
Probably a usual story when it comes to Brighton. I'd imagine they're going to play pretty well. They're going to create some opportunities.
Could you just sort of try and give it a little bit more enthusiasm? This is your, you know, big opportunity to big up your commentary, which is live on TalkSport at 5:30. If you could try and sell it as much as possible. Can we do that again? We should try and just retake. Let's start. And action.
I think you're probably going to see more of the same from Brighton. They're going to play very attractive football. They're going to be pretty to watch. They're going to create chances. They're not going to take those chances. And then Wolves, who we know are the archetypal second half team, they'll soak up the pressure until half time and they'll probably score two counter-attack goals and win the game 2-0.
You said exactly the same thing there. You just made it faster and had a slightly higher octave in your voice. Just saying.
That's the art of commentary, Sam. As you know, I'm starting to worry for Brighton, and I've been worried for them for several weeks now because they are playing well, but they're not winning games. One home win in the calendar year
is unbelievable. I sent you that statistic in midweek. I couldn't believe it. My jaw was on the floor. They've won one match at home in 2020.
I don't know where I stand on Graham Potter. I think he's a good coach. I think he's got tactical awareness. I think he's improved the brand of football. I think if you actually stuck a striker in that team who could score goals on a regular basis, then they would turn a lot more of their territorial domination into wins. But he seems to change the team every week.
Why did he change the team so dramatically in midweek and leave basically anyone who had an ounce of attacking talent on the bench?
I don't know. I honestly do not know.
Because that was an odd team selection, that. I mean, as odd team selections go, that was the oddest I've seen so far this season.
Especially against an Arsenal side who, as Darren has already articulated, have a soft spine. So to not play any of your main goal scorers seems a very bizarre way to try and win a football match. And I think Tony Bloom is a loyal chairman, and they've hung their hat on Graham Potter. They gave him a massive contract a couple of months after taking the job. I'm still not completely sure why they felt the need to do that. I think they will stick with him, but they will be acutely aware that there are teams behind them in the table that are capable of going on a run and reeling them into trouble. So that they need to start winning games soon. They need to find a striker in January. I'm not sure how they're going to do that. I know they do like Dominic Solanke, who finally seems to have found his goal-scoring touch in the Championship at Bournemouth. It would be a gamble because he didn't score goals regularly in the Premier League, but it wouldn't surprise me if possibly he's a player that they try and bring to the Amex. But they need someone that they could do worse than recall Glenn Murray, to be honest, who isn't getting a game at Watford. And despite his lack of pace, at least he does know where the back of the net is.
Wolverhampton Wanderers have a similar problem, Darren, in that they have registered 4 blanks in their last 8 Premier League away games. They don't seem to be scoring as many goals, obviously because of the horrific injury to Raul Jimenez, but there is no replacement for him.
No, there isn't. I mean, Pedro Neto's looked good, Vitinha's looked good, Fabio Silva has looked decent, but he's young and he's got a long way to go before he's anywhere near the kind of player that Jimenez is. We talked earlier in the show about the chances they created. Okay, we disputed them, but the facts are that they had more chances in that United game, and they are creating those chances as well. It is just that they can't seem to finish them off, which is why Diego Costa continues to be the name floating around. The agent, Jorge Mendes, has that connection with the club. Look, is Costa the player that he was? And I mean, he has had a lot of injuries.
Haven't they stipulated he can't go certain places, though, Diego Costa?
They don't want him to go to a rival club in Spain. That's a big thing. Messi talked the other day at Barcelona about the fact that Luis Suarez went to Atletico Madrid. He wasn't happy about that. The big clubs don't want players going to rival clubs and strengthening them for very obvious reasons. But I don't think the BA have any problems with him coming here to England, and he'd be a good fit for Wolves if he were to stay fit.
Right, let's move on to the bank holiday bonus. Yeah, Friday is New Year's Day, and there are 2 games on New Year's Day. Let's start with Manchester United against Aston Villa. Aston Villa have been in terrific form and actually played very well. Second half against Chelsea, I thought, in particular. And as we've already mentioned, rattled the crossbar late on in that game. They take on a Manchester United side that have made a habit of winning matches, although not as many matches at home as maybe you would think. They got a brilliant record against Aston Villa. Out of the 188 previous meetings between the two, they have won 99 of them, Crook. Will they make it 100?
Well, historically, Aston Villa have been a team, as you've illustrated, that they love to play against. I think confidence in the Manchester United camp is high at the moment. I think that will only be increased by the fact they did manage to turn 1 point into three so late on against Wolverhampton Wanderers. I've mentioned already, I think they've improved defensively. I think Harry Maguire has undergone a bit of a rebirth at the heart of that Manchester United defence. They've got genuine match winners now in Fernandes and Rashford, whose stats for the season are very, very good. And Aston Villa are still a team I think you can get at. So if Manchester United bring their A game, if they play at their best, then they would expect to win the game. But this is a psychological test, because they know if they win, they go level on points with Liverpool. And that brings its own pressure, a pressure they haven't experienced for some time.
Let's talk a little bit about Bruno Fernandes. I had a brilliant interview on TalkSport with him this week, Darren, and he was talking about, look, I can't be the same player as Cristiano Ronaldo. I'm very different to him. But I grew up admiring him terribly, and I want his mentality. And that mentality is complete obsession with winning every single game. And one of the things that came across was, you know, they dropped 2 points at Leicester, and he was furious about it. He was irritated by it. I mean, someone asked him about the assist that he got. He went, yeah, I probably didn't mean it, and I just about got a toe end on the ball. But ultimately, we should have had more goals, because I created others' chances for our strikers, and they didn't put them away. He's got that sort of drive.
He does, and the numbers back him up. Since he signed last February, he has being directly involved in more goals than any other player in the Premier League.
32.
18 goals, 14 assists. And,
wow.
You know, I think Man United might have a different problem going forward, because big players and big performances attract interest from bigger clubs.
Like who?
Well, listen, a Real Madrid, a Barcelona,
neither of whom have got any money.
Really, are they bigger clubs now?
Man United are still second in December. You know, and they still have that poor home record. How many teams have they beaten in the Premier League at home? Remind me again. Two?
Three.
Three? I mean, really.
Where are Barcelona in the La Liga table?
Barcelona are struggling under Ronald Koeman, absolutely. But they are Barcelona.
Real Madrid is second.
Yeah, Real Madrid. They are Real Madrid. You know, he is Zinedine Zidane.
Manchester United, aren't they?
Yeah, but they're managed by a guy that not everyone is convinced by. 1 week after a couple of decent results, everyone's demanding apologies for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Another week after bad results, everyone is saying, oh, well, is he really up to it? And they're asking that
kind
of...
I'm not necessarily sure that was the same thing.
Which suggests that they're not convinced by him at all. Look.
Darren? To use your phrase, you've said since the start of the season, Manchester United are a team you can't trust. Mm. And I think you've been right. I'm starting to trust them a bit more. Watching the past couple of games, I didn't fear for them against Leicester. Mm. I didn't fear they wouldn't win the game against Wolves. I think there has been a slight change in the mentality there now, and I think there's a bit more fear factor about Manchester United, mainly because of Bruno Fernandes, than there has been in the past. Do you agree?
I would agree. I would say this, because you've got to give credit where it's due, and I think you're right, Alex. I think that they've won seven of their last nine since they lost to Arsenal at the start of November. And to be fair to them, they've manoeuvred themselves into a position where they could take their chances. But there are a couple of things that still concern me. They've conceded more goals than any other team in the top 10.
If you take six against Spurs.
Exactly. If you take Fernandes out of that side, where is that dynamism? Where is that driving force? Where is that mentality? He is their leader. That's why I started what I was saying with him, because I think if you take him out, they've still got those defensive frailties. And I think the key thing about this match is that a lot of people underestimate Aston Villa, just as they did against Chelsea.
I was about to say to you, they've had a brilliant return to form after lockdown. I mean, if you look at their numbers in terms of conceding goals since lockdown, I mean, it's brilliant. And it just basically proves the point that if you've got a coach who can identify problems and then knows how to fix them, and he's prepared to work on them diligently, then you can achieve a lot with not a limited squad, because they're not a limited squad, but they are a squad that you probably wouldn't anticipate being 1 point behind Liverpool should they win their two games in hand. Everton against West Ham is also a Friday night kickoff, 6 o'clock, Goodison Park. West Ham United they've just dipped a bit themselves, haven't they, after what was a really good start to the season. Everton have started to find their form again. They've had extra rest. That is one thing that will happen. I mean, that through no fault of their own, Everton have had an extra day off, and therefore this congested period where lots of teams are playing within hours of one another has actually going to be skewed in the end, isn't it, because of the issues that have happened.
And that's probably why David Moyes was so angry when I asked him a very simple question, a very innocent question. Are you concerned by the number of COVID cases after the game at Southampton? He said, well, nobody cared about me when I got it. And then
that's not true. That's not true. We did care about him.
And then said there were different rules for different clubs. I mean, that's a separate point. But I think his frustration is probably because he knows Everton are going to come into the game a little bit fresher. I was quite impressed with West Ham in the week. It was a very defensive-minded approach. I thought Dawson was excellent on his first Premier League appearance of the season.
Shea Adams not entirely sure about that.
Yeah, that was a bizarre incident. They set up not to lose that game at Southampton. If they won it, it was a bonus. And I think it will be a similar approach against Everton because that's the type of manager that David Moyes is. But if Everton are going to win this game, they're going to have to go and win it. I don't think this West Ham team are one that gift cheap points to the opposition, and David Moyes has to take a lot of credit for that. 8 defeats, I think, since he came back.
Right, let's move on. Roulette rivalry time. Lucy. How are
Hello.
You? You're right.
Yeah, I'm good, sir. Yeah.
Happy New Year.
Oh. Happy New Year.
That's the most cheery she's ever been on this podcast, I think. Well, did you get a lie in this morning?
No, I'm in a really good mood because Sam has sent me some lovely champagne.
Did he actually?
Oh. He did.
Where's mine?
No, she won the quiz. Well, she didn't win the quiz, but she came second in the quiz.
I was going to say.
Yeah, but you don't drink.
She didn't come second. She came third.
Well, whatever. Listen,
and
she's done a good job.
Who's been the person keeping you sane this year? You've spoken to me more than you've spoken to Mrs. Matterface.
I've spoken to Lucy quite a bit as well, and Darren.
To be fair, Crook, Lucy deserves it.
Yeah, I mean, Lucy does.
A, she puts
it.
Up with us. B, she does all the work.
She makes us sound. She makes us sound at least average every single week, which is a major upgrade.
Well, I hope it wasn't an expensive bottle. She's happy with a cheap.
Start before a fight begins.
Quick, move on.
So this is Roulette Rivalry, one to watch. So I'll give you 45 seconds to talk about a player from one of the upcoming fixtures. And this week, I want you to look at Crystal Palace v Sheffield United.
Ooh. Lucy, can I ask, did you pick them this week? Because we said last week that Sam, we needed the steward's inquiry because Sam was picking them and then doing really well.
Yep, Mr. Micromanager would never let her pick them.
Yeah, I didn't pick them.
Come on.
Anyway, Lucy, come on, move on.
Remember, no notes, no waffle. And Sam, I'm going to give you...
No. There you go. I'm going to close my eyes. So you know that I haven't made any notes. Here we go. Look, I've got my eyes closed. Go on, go for it.
John Lundstrom. Your time starts now.
Integral last season, John Lundstrom. Creating goals, scoring goals, a big driving force in the dressing room as well. He's had a contract dispute with Sheffield United, which is, I think, yet to be resolved. As a result of that, Chris Wilder hasn't used him as much. I wonder how much of an influence that's had in adding to their problems. Because he's such a creative force, they need to get the best out of him because he needs to provide the bullets for the strikers to miss their chances. Look, he is a very good player. I think he's one of the few players in the Sheffield United squad that if they and when they do get relegated at the end of the campaign, he will be much sought after by other suitors within the Premier League. Is that not 45 seconds? Oh, good. My
eyes struggling a bit there. I think, what was the player that you gave me a couple of weeks ago and I was struggling a bit and you killed me over it?
What about when you did Carl Darlow and you went on for about Carl 4 hours? Because you didn't hear Lucy say stop.
How good was he in midweek, by the way?
Yeah, he was brilliant. He missed one massive corner kick that went over his head.
Yeah, Firmino should have scored.
And when Firmino should have scored. But there was a brilliant moment where we asked Jurgen Klopp about that last night and he turned around and said, we said, oh, you came up against a goalkeeper who was absolutely brilliant. And he went, well, he missed one completely and it went over his head and Firmino should have scored. It was like, all right, okay. He made four other world-class saves, you know. But anyway, fair enough. What's next, Luz?
Right, Darren, you're up next. And I'm going to give you Aaron Ramsdale.
Oh, that means I've got the whole...
Thank you, Lucy. I'm going to send you a bottle of champagne as well. He's a 22-year-old goalkeeper.
he's a player.
Well, he's 22. Don't you want to know how old he is?
Yeah. Go for it.
There you go.
Wasting seconds.
Listen, his age is significant because obviously he's having a bit of a nightmare at the moment at Sheffield United. They've re-signed him. And listen, he had big shoes to fill in coming in for Dean Henderson, who's gone back to Manchester United. And the £18.5 million that they paid for him to sign him from Bournemouth did look a hell of a lot of money at the time. But at the same time, he did do well with Bournemouth last season. Set against all of that, Bournemouth went down, and that looks set to happen to Ramsdale again, because the players in front of him are letting him down week after week.
Yeah, he didn't make any notes for that, did he? None at all.
I didn't make any notes.
How did you know he was 22 off the top of your head?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, no, I did. Listen.
Well, for sure.
Wait a minute. You can see me on the screen. Did I look as though I was looking at notes? I was looking all over the place.
Yeah. Prep.
Would you not want me to prep for you?
No. Oh, no, here we go. Don't throw it back at me. I know what you're doing. Come on, let's see how
this
much...
This is going to be the longest 45 seconds of my life, by the way.
Hold on, can I just quickly go and get some popcorn for this bit, please?
Who's he got, Luce? Who's he got?
You have got Jack Robinson, and your time starts now.
Oh, this is brilliant. The one Sheffield United player that the majority of Premier League fans have never heard of. Jack Robinson is a defender. He has 12 letters in his name. He shares his surname with the Simon and Garfunkel song, so here's to you, Mrs. Robinson. So if Sheffield United fans don't sing that for him, then they probably should. I mean, there is a serious side to this, because they've really missed Jack O'Connell this year, and Robinson is the player who's come in on the left-hand side of that defence. Clearly, he isn't Jack O'Connell, and I think that's been a big problem for Sheffield United, not quite as adroit at carrying the ball out of defence, and it looks like they're going into the Championship, and I think O'Connell's absence and therefore Robinson playing is a big reason. And here's to you, Mrs. Robinson. Are we done yet?
Yeah. To try and get to the 45 seconds.
He started off by talking about Jack Robinson and finished off talking about Jack O'Connell.
Do you want the good news about Jack Robinson? The reason he was included in that list is because he is third on the Premier League list of 2020's best tacklers. He has got a true tackle percentage of 73.1, and only two players in the league who have played more than 900 minutes have a better percentage. Do you know who that is?
Two better tacklers. Aaron Wan-Bissaka?
Correct. Yeah, he's top of the list, 78.8%.
Andy Robertson?
Nope. He's not on the list
Yannick
at
Vestergaard.
All. Neither of those two are on the list. He's an Everton player. 60 grand.
Oh, Seamus Coleman,
yes, 76.4%. So there was a reason why Jack Robinson was in that list today, because he is his tackling is exceptional.
And he's 27.
He's not Jack O'Connell.
And he's got 12 letters in his name. And he shares his name with the subject of a Simon and Garfunkel song. Well, he doesn't really, because he's not Mrs. Robinson, is he? He's very much Mr. Robinson.
I thought the best way around that was to make it entertaining.
Oh, he certainly did that.
Did you do that? Did he do that?
No.
Right, Sunday is always fun day on TalkSport, with the Sunday session on air this week at 3 o'clock. Andy Cole, Perry Groves and I will be on air as we follow and react to all the live football as it happens. And this Sunday is as loaded as Cyberpunk 2077. Should we start with Newcastle against Leicester City? Newcastle getting a really good result in midweek, a draw with Liverpool. I thought they defended really well. Darlow played exceptionally. Wilson was a real threat going forward. In fact, Darren, I had a notepad and I was writing down events in the game, and after 20 minutes I'd written just three words: Wilson, Wilson and Wilson, because he did cause problems in that first sort of half an hour, didn't he?
He did. If you look at his touch pad as well, 31 touches in the game, lots of them all in the midfield. He did a lot of his best work outside of the box, tracking back, but also holding the ball up well in the final third as well to bring other people into the play. And listen, we all know that it was a good amount of money that they'd spent on him because of his goals threat, full stop. But his industry and the side of his game that people don't talk about that often really came to the fore. And in a match, really, you have to say that Steve Bruce needed to get something out of, because the vultures were circling, and he is still under pressure after a bad run of form. It's 5 games without a win now for him, and only 2 wins from the last 9. So he needed something on Wednesday night, and that was an inspirational performance from Darlow and in particular from Callum Wilson.
What about Leicester City? I mean, we can't ignore them when we're talking about teams that have overperformed so far this season. They're third in the league with 29 points from their 16 games. I think, bearing in mind the injury situation that they've had, they've done a very good job to be in and around that zone, Crook.
Yeah, they'll be disappointed, I think, to only get 2 points from their two games over the festive period. They played well against Manchester United and probably deserved a share of the spoils against Crystal Palace. They found it a bit more difficult after that missed penalty from Ian Atcher. I think probably that game encapsulates why, for me, they won't finish in the top four, because they rested Jamie Vardy, as they tend to do when they have two games back-to-back in quick succession, and the backup options are just not good enough. Ian Atcher isn't someone who's going to score goals at the level that is required of a top four team in the Premier League, whether that is something that Brendan Rodgers looks to try and improve in the January transfer window remains to be seen. They've had an excellent first half of the season, but I do expect them to fall away. Will they fall away in this game? Possibly, but I think if Vardy plays, then they've got a great chance to get back on track.
Southampton-Liverpool is on 8 o'clock on Monday night. Now, usually we don't really touch on the Monday night games, but we should really touch on Liverpool because they are the leaders of the league. Quick word on this match. I suppose the key thing is squad depth, isn't it? You know, the fact is that Liverpool have got a decent level of squad. They can rotate at this stage of the year, and they've got some injury issues being solved. Thiago came into the game late on in the second half against Newcastle. Darren, Oxlade-Chamberlain was on the bench as well. Things starting to tidy up a little bit. Jurgen Klopp saying afterwards to us that, you know, it's always a good day when you come off the pitch, you ask the first question, is anyone injured? And the answer you get back is no.
And, you know, he said something in his post-match that kind of echoed what I was saying to you at the start of this show, which is that he couldn't care less about the table. You start to get serious about the league around about Easter, as Sir Alex Ferguson always used to say, and then you see who can do best at the end of the campaign. I think as far as Liverpool are concerned, there are two ways of looking at their recent run of form. Yes, it has been disappointing that they've not been able to beat Fulham, that they were held by West Brom, that they were disappointing on Wednesday night against Newcastle. But the fact is they are top, having lost their best defender and having had a raft of injuries in all sorts of positions all season. And they're still top and they're able to repel everything everyone else is throwing at them. This will be a difficult game for them because I think Southampton have got three draws from their last four games. They're very good at home. City squeaked past them by a single goal. I was at that match. But I think whatever happens in this match, I think I'll be most fascinated about seeing what Liverpool do in a transfer window over the next 4 weeks.
Key injury to Yannick Vestergaard. I never thought I'd say those words back to back, Crook, but indeed he isn't going to be available for this game.
No, although Jack Stevens has come in and done pretty well. Spoke to him after the game in midweek. He's pleased to be getting some minutes under his belt, the man that Southampton fans call the Cornish Maldini. But speaking of centre-backs... That tickled him. Speaking of centre-backs, I thought Phillips for Liverpool looked gettable. In Danny Ings, Southampton have a very clever player who possibly could exploit those chinks in his armoury. Although, I saw a remarkable stat after the game in midweek. Danny Ings didn't have a single touch in the opposition penalty area. And I actually spoke to somebody at half-time and said, why is Danny Ings dropping so deep into midfield? That they're almost trying to use him like Spurs have Harry Kane. But that meant at times he's out on the left wing, he's out on the right wing. You want Danny Ings in the penalty area doing what he does best. And I think that will certainly be something that Ralph Hasenhüttl, if I spotted it, he will have spotted it. And I think we'll see much more of Danny Ings in that action area than we did on Wednesday.
As far as Southampton are concerned, they show a lot of respect to the bigger clubs. I remember when they played Arsenal, they had their foot on Arsenal's throat. And they obviously were held to a 1-1 draw. And after the match, we asked Hasenhüttl why he didn't, you know, really go in for the kill. He said, they're just so good. No matter how much they're struggling, we know they've got quality going forward. And he was worried about being caught in the counter-attack. And I think you might see a similar situation with Ings, Crook, where all hands go onto the pump and it might well be that he too doesn't get into that final third because they're so worried about overcommitting and getting caught on a counter-attack.
Let's go to Burnley against Fulham. What are we expecting from this one? Are we expecting this one to go ahead, first of all? I suppose that's the big question.
Well, I hope so, because I'm supposed to be covering it for Talk Sport Live and I don't really want Sunday off. But it is a pertinent point with Fulham obviously postponing their game, or the Premier League postponing their game late on. I guess, again, we need some clarification. How many players and staff have been affected? The number that I've seen is 6 players and 4 staff. Well, if you've got a 25-man playing squad, you should still be able to put out a team and some subs.
So, I think Sheffield United will be quite hard, feel quite hard done by being made to play because they had one less positive corona test than you're supposed to have to get it called off. I mean, if they wanted it called off. Transparency factor, I think, is really key here. And I think there needs to be a much better set of circumstances to assess these situations by. Burnley actually have done all right. They've picked up another 3 points. They don't score any goals, Burnley. They really are...
9
goals, which is less than sort of like, what is it, 0.75 a game. How on earth are they 16th? It's crazy, isn't it?
What are their expected goals?
12.84.
Wow. So what does that mean?
That means they're underperforming on their expected goals. They're missing big chances. The team with the lowest expected goals, do you know who that is?
Newcastle, surely.
No. Newcastle's expected G is 15.29, and they're slightly underperforming on their XG.
West Bromwich Albion.
Their expected goals total is 8.77. They've actually scored 11 goals, so they're slightly overperforming on what where they're expected to be.
See, if I was judged by expected goals in terms of household chores, etc., I think Mrs. Crook would probably accuse me of underperforming. So let's not dwell on this.
I don't think she accuses you of underperforming. she makes. A factual statement.
Went down that road very quickly and decided that maybe you shouldn't, Crook.
Underperforming, yeah. Serial underperformer, Alex Crook. Thank you very much. Darren Lewis, thank you very much as well. We appreciate your time on what is New Year's Eve for us. I hope wherever you are in the world, you have a great new year. Crook has just done a dance akin to Chris Waddle in 1990 after the Belgium game. However, I will point out that you're not having a party tonight. So, you know, you're in tier 4 like the rest of us. So what are you going to do? Just sit on your own?
Yeah, and get drunk. Just to be honest, which is what I do most Thursday nights.
Don't do that at home, kids. That's it from us. We'll see you Monday for a look back on all the weekend's football. And please rate and review the podcast, download it, and tell all your friends about us on Game Day from TalkSport.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.